8:02 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. It is time now for hour three of the podcast, the show. It will be a podcast later, I suppose. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio, Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over how many?
1,500. No, 2,500.
2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net.
So you thought I got it wrong.
I was ready to jump down your throat.
That's
you idiot.
See, this
2,500.
This is the 4D chess that I'm playing. I put the bait out there for Bruff so I can expose him as a tyrant and a not nice coworker. Just kidding.
That's already been exposed.
Very clear on the
speaking
show.
Speaking of things not working, I believe Peter Galindo's cell phone is not working, a cellular telephone. He did mention last night, as I was texting back and forth, I was trying to get updates on Ali Ahmed's condition. For those that missed it last night, the Whitecaps won 3-0 at Starlight against Pacific FC in the Canadian Championship.
Good crowd there. Over 5,000 sold out.
They were very excited about the possibility of another upset. Mm. And unfortunately, what the fans got was a really, really awful experience. Not only did the home team lose quite one-sidedly, 3-0, Whitecaps midfielder Ali Ahmed had a really horrific crash collision with the turf after a very hard tackle early in the match. Ahmed scored in the 17th minute to make it 2-0 Whitecaps. And then 2 minutes later, he kind of went head over tea kettle, however you want to put it, on a slide tackle, landed on his head, neck, and arm in a really, really violent and awkward way and was knocked unconscious.
It's artificial turf there?
Yeah. So it just was not good. The Whitecaps medical staff rushed onto the field, and then the trainer... And you kind of now know what the signals, the universal signals for get help. He kind of did the finger, not that finger, another finger, to suggest we got to get an ambulance and a stretcher on the field right away. And then the towels came up to kind of protect what they were doing visually, Ahmed, because I think he lost consciousness for a while, regained consciousness, and was able to move his extremities and everything. But it was a very scary situation because of the way that he hit the turf and then the fact that he lost consciousness.
So I guess the good news for the Whitecaps is they won the game 3-0. They will face Montreal in the final June 7th at BC Place. Of course, they won this tournament last year when they beat Toronto in the final.
The highlight of last
year. At BC Place. Montreal beat Toronto way back in the quarterfinals. They went on to beat Hamilton's Forge FC in the semifinal. So it'll be Vancouver and Montreal in the final. BC Place June 7th.
Let's go to the phone lines now. We are joined by Sportsnet analyst Peter Galindo here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Pete?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. Are you on the ferry right now?
No, in traffic, getting onto the ferry. Pretty classic tale.
Okay, so I started off light here, but obviously the match yesterday, it was heavy. It was a lot to take in, I imagine, for you in attendance at Starlight in Langford. It couldn't have been an enjoyable experience watching what happened to Ali Ahmed in the 20th minute.
No, and it was one of those situations where it looked like, you know, just a pretty routine tackle. You know, Cedric Toussaint goes in on Ahmed. Both players were going at full speed. And, you know, Toussaint, even when the challenge was finished, he even kind of bent over to Ali and sort of, you know, put a hand on his back being like, hey, like that was a good 50-50. And then Ahmed just stayed down pretty much motionless for the next 10 minutes. And it was about a 17 or 18 minute stoppage in total. The sheets go up. We don't really know what's happening with Ahmed. Things start kind of swirling around. You obviously want to be careful with reporting certain information. Luckily, and I mean, I say this, you know, somewhat loosely, but, you know, no broken bones for Ahmed from the sound of it. He does have a concussion, of course, just the way he fell on the turf. But the fact that he was cleared to travel back to Vancouver last night is a really good sign, because when we spoke to Vanni Sartini after the game, he didn't really seem to know what was going to happen. So that is obviously very encouraging news. And with modern day concussion protocols in all sports, guys, like it's a really good thing we have that, because who knows what possibly could have happened without it.
Right. And so the aftermath, again, I mentioned it happened in the 20th minute. You know, this was on the surface, this was supposed to be a real mouth-watering matchup for a Canadian championship because of the history that the Whitecaps had being upset on the road against Pacific in Langford. I know the Pacific fans were out in droves. Jason mentioned it was a really good crowd. It was a really nice night. But then everything, there must have just been a pall cast across the entire thing after that. What was it like following the Ahmed injury?
Yeah, there was a hush over the stadium, understandably. And even after the game got started again, like, fans were still kind of, you know, wondering, like, hey, should I really be cheering here? Like, there was that really awkward kind of final, what would it have been, I guess, a half an hour almost, just because of all the stoppage time of the first half. And the Whitecaps admitted afterwards, understandably, like, their minds were elsewhere. And you could see it just based on the fact Pacific took control of the game. Vancouver kind of just didn't have much interest, and Julian Gressel and Sartini admitted as much after the game, that it did take a while for them to kind of get over. And even still, you could see it in their faces that they were still very, very concerned, understandably so. So, yes, you know, the Whitecaps going up 2-0 maybe could have killed off the game. But the way Pacific plays, you maybe could have backed them to make a decent game of it. But then the injury pretty much just ruined any chance of, well, not ruined, but, you know, kind of just, you know, the match ceased to exist. In other words, just in terms of the competition being there.
So for the Whitecaps now, they do advance to their second consecutive Canadian championship. They'll take on Montreal this time. Last year, for a lot of people, they'll remember, because there was a good crowd out. I think it was about 25,000 people. They defeated TFC in penalties and ended up being the high mark of the season. Now, I mention that because this Canadian championship is going to come in a window. I've never seen scheduling like this in my life, Peter.
Yep.
The Whitecaps are going to play 5 games in 14 days.
Mm-hmm.
So it begins Saturday. So this is what they do. They go Saturday at St. Louis, Wednesday at home to Houston, Saturday at home to Sporting KC, Wednesday at home, Canadian Championship against Montreal, and then Saturday, another home match against Cincinnati. How do you even go about trying to manage 5 matches in 14 days?
Well, you know, here's the funny thing as well. The Whitecaps actually flew to Victoria because they needed to reduce travel time, right? Because they know how many flights they're going to be getting on over the next couple weeks. And they're going to be flying down to St. Louis, I believe it's today or tomorrow. And they chartered to York United when they played in their quarterfinal. Because, I mean, they're flying across the country and they had a quick turnaround again. And you're kind of already starting to see a little bit of the effects, because in those games against Portland and then Dallas, when they had to have the quick 2-3 day turnarounds, they had relatively flat performances, just weren't at their sharpest. So now it's going to be fascinating to see how they react to that, because with a big final coming up, with them doing, well, at least their form looking really, really good, because up until those 2 losses, they had gone 8 in a row unbeaten, and they're looking pretty good in MLS. They're playing some entertaining stuff. How long is that going to last with the fact that they're going to have, as you mentioned, those 5 games in 14 days, which is pretty unprecedented, especially for an MLS team?
We're speaking to soccer analyst Peter Galindo here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Peter, this weekend, it is the final weekend of the English Premier League campaign, match day 38, and all eyes are focused. Now, for those that don't understand, the bottom of the standings, not to see who will get the first overall pick in next year's EPL draft. That's not how this works. There are going to be 3 teams that don't get to come back next year. They get relegated. They have to go play in the championship and play Millwall and Luton, which is a lot of fun. There's 2 relegation spots that still need to be sorted out. There's 3 teams that could fall into them. My beloved Leeds, Leicester, and Everton. If you had to guess, by the time this weekend is done, who are the 2 teams that are going to be joining Southampton in going down?
I mean, I hate to tell you this, Mike. It might end up being Leeds. Just the way that they're... I mean, even just the comments that they have after the game, kind of sounding all downtrodden. You have Sam Allardyce coming out and saying, like, yeah, we just get hard on ourselves and that's it. Like, basically when something bad happens, that's the end of us. And when you're in a relegation battle, I understand it's difficult sometimes to stay upbeat and to stay positive, but when you have conceded as many leads as Leeds have, I mean, I believe they're the team that's actually conceded the most points from a winning position this season. When you're, you know, experiencing players who you paid a lot of money for, who just don't necessarily fit into the new system Allardyce plays, or just aren't getting it done, like a Brendan Aaronson, for example, then you're going to have this situation. And it doesn't also probably help that the owners are also looking at buying Sampdoria in Italy as well. So I'm sure their minds are already elsewhere with relegation kind of, you know, potentially hitting them square in the face.
It's always interesting to look at the EPL table and look at the different levels of teams and what they achieved, and trying to figure out, was this season successful or was it a failure? For example, Nottingham Forest will finish 16th overall, but I think we can conclude that they had a more successful season than Chelsea, who will finish maybe 12th overall, middle of the pack, or even Spurs, who will finish 8th because they look good for a little bit and then they completely fell apart and they might not even play at all in Europe next season. So when you look at all the teams in England, who stands out as having a really disappointing season, or who stands out as having a really successful season? Because I don't think it's just like, well, Man City had a successful season, right, because they won the league, and, you know, Southampton didn't have a successful season because they finished dead last.
Right, yeah. I mean, when you're looking at, in terms of they just really underachieved, you have to look at Chelsea for sure, just because of the money they spent, the fact that they went through a couple of coaches trying to get this right. It didn't seem like they had any real semblance of a plan, because when you end up signing all of these players in the summer and then fire the coach a few games into the season, bring in another coach who can maybe get something out of it, but then you have this bloated squad, you got all these egos to manage, and guys aren't getting certain playing time just because you got about 75 players. Like, I mean, that's an exaggeration, but probably not far off, to be honest. You're going to end up having this problem. Whoever, whether it's Pochettino, who it looks like is going to be coming in, they've got a lot on their plate to deal with for next season, just because they're not going to have Champions League. Yes, they can focus only on one competition, but you still got a bloated squad. They're probably going to face some financial fair play repercussions just because of all the money they've spent. And they're willing to take that because to them, that's just the price of doing business. So you look at it from that side, that's a team who's woefully underachieved. Overachieve, it's probably Brighton, because when you look at all the sales they've made, including one to Chelsea and Mark Cucurella for over £60 million, and then the fact that they were able to replenish the squad just as effectively as when they had those guys in there, and to get into Europe and to be playing in UEFA competition next season against some of the teams who dwarf their budget, that's a massive achievement. And ditto for Nottingham Forest, because they did not expect to get promoted last season.
Yeah.
And so they had to spend over $100 million just to make a Premier League-ready squad. And I suppose this is also fascinating from a Canadian perspective, because Richie Larea's loan with Toronto FC is coming up here soon. And if he goes back to England, well, then what's his club future going to be like? Does he get a chance to play in the Premier League next season? I don't think he will. But then does he get a loan somewhere to that second division in England? Does he go to Belgium, who reportedly, you know, lots of clubs were interested in him from Belgium before he went to Toronto FC, things like that. So those would be the two teams that I would look at in terms of being sort of the biggest overachievers in the league this season.
Are there any Canadians in the Premier League right now? And if there aren't, who might be headed there?
Well, I suppose on rosters, you've got Tom McGill, who was a backup goalkeeper for Brighton. He's actually on
Tom McGill
against Man City yesterday.
Right.
And he's one who was in the camp in March. He didn't end up seeing the pitch, but there's a lot of high hopes for him. He's 23 years old, dual national, played for England's youth teams. So there's him, Daniel Jevison, who's another dual national. He's going to be playing for United next season. I doubt he'll stay on the squad just because he's 19, 20 years old. He hasn't really gotten much of a run in the championship, let alone in the Premier League. So I don't imagine he'll stick around. But after that, I mean, we could end up seeing Jonathan David.
Yeah.
Just because of the amount of transfer buzz that's swirling around him. It looks like Leo's already identified his replacement, which is kind of a sign that He's probably going to be off somewhere. The question is where, just because all these clubs have different targets. One falls through, they got to go to the next guy on the list, and David seems to be on a lot of those teams' lists.
Is Harry Kane going to go to United?
I think it's possible, yeah. I mean, if he ends up staying there, I understand he is loyal to Tottenham. I understand that he wants to have success there, but I think up to a certain point, you have to just hold your hands up and say, well, listen, I mean, if we're not going to be playing in the top competitions next season, if we're not competing for titles, mm-hmm. what's the point? And you've also got the Euros to look at. Do I want to be playing for a team that has maybe bigger aspirations than Tottenham would have right now in terms of Man United being that club? And honestly, they need a number nine too. And he would be just a ready-made fit for that club because he's a guy who's going to be tactically disciplined. He obviously scores a lot of goals. So he could fill in a lot of needs for United. And then they also can give him maybe a little bit of that prestige that he has lacked at times playing for Tottenham.
Peter, this was great, man. Thanks a lot for doing this. As always, travel safe on the ferry, and I'll see you tomorrow morning for breakfast.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Peter Galindo, Sportsnet's very own here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Peter is also working for John Herdman in a scouting capacity for the Canadian men's national team. I went out for beers with him over the weekend, got to pick his brain a little bit. It's pretty cool. He's doing a pre-scout.
What kind of stuff is he doing?
Doing the scouting the opponents. He was scouting Guatemala.
Oh, was he?
Yep. So, yeah,
Did they have a game against Argentina the other day?
Who?
Guatemala?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know
I thought I was Guatemala's watching a friendly.
International friendly schedule
oh, okay.
off the top of my head.
you should know that if you're the soccer expert.
It's so much.
What's next for Honduras?
I don't know.
Do you think El Salvador has a bright future?
There's too much CONCACAF talk going on right now. I'm kind of focused on the Premier League right now. I'm kind of a Premier League guy right now, but... He did mention that it's a very exciting summer for the Canadian men's national team because they've mm-hmm. got the Gold Cup, they've got CONCACAF League qualifying. They'll be down in Vegas playing at Allegiant. That's just kind of cool.
So let's do some what we learns here. I learned that Ja Morant had fans and everyone pretty worried about him yesterday. Now, the good news in all this is that police conducted a welfare check on Morant, and they say he is fine. Mm-hmm. But Morant posted a bunch of what people are calling cryptic messages on his Instagram account. For example, there were pictures, I guess, of his mom and him saying, "Love you, Ma," and then "Love you, Pops," and then other family pictures about his daughter, I think. Mm-hmm. And then a fourth message simply read, "Bye." As in, goodbye. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you read that and you consider what was going on with Ja Morant in his life, you're like, yeah, a welfare check sounds like a good idea. But apparently, he was just saying goodbye to social media.
Yeah, I think
is that essentially what
happened?
Yeah,
and then he was told maybe you should delete that because it's sending mixed messages. So like. I mean, look, he is
not in a good place.
But this is also these are the pitfalls and perils of trying to communicate through social media, if we're being honest. Not enough people have conversations anymore. Have you ever had a text or received a text that you've completely misread or misunderstood or you didn't get the nuance of it? And, you know, like if someone asks you a question, you reply, "I don't care." And you're thinking, yeah, like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. And then they receive it and they're like, "He doesn't care. He doesn't care." I run into those issues all the time. I'm like, we should rely less on texts and pictures and social media to try and convey, here's the important part, very important messages at very important times of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's something to be said for clarity and communication when you're going through a difficult time. And I'm not putting any of this at the feet of Ja Morant, saying he needs to be more responsible social media engager and member. But this, I think it's just one of those, this is what happens.
I think everyone's really just confused about him.
They are.
Right now.
And because yesterday is a very confusing situation.
Yeah. You just keep wondering why he makes these bad decisions. Is this all a cry for help? Mm-hmm. And when you read, like, I don't even 100% believe that that the story that's being concocted or told, not,
see,
not necessarily
like
concocted,
that,
right?
You see, that's what I'm saying. You say it like
I'm like,
that.
I don't believe that. If you were to ask me, I'm like, that wasn't just him saying goodbye to social media. I think he was that seems to me like a cry for help.
Right.
Very dramatic.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is that the central figure in all of this is that it's like it's out there for everybody to see. That's what social media is. It's to put something on a platform where everyone gets to witness it, experience it, and as you just pointed out, analyze it.
Yeah.
That's a big issue.
So I feel bad about this, but let's give us a moo cow on that.
It's always tough.
It's always tough.
It's always tough to moo cow.
Do any of you guys have what we learns? We need them.
I got one.
Laddie's got one. Here we go.
Yeah. The biggest sports breakthrough of 2023 is what I learned, you guys.
Excuse me?
Winning an award at the Sports Business Awards, the NHL takes it for their digitally enhanced Dasher boards.
Someone gave those an award?
It is a sports breakthrough of the year, my friends.
Yeah, you should have heard the speech. The acceptance speech was inspiring.
Who does
they
the,
went up
who
there
the
and
the board?
The boards went up there and they just flashed an ad for a betting company and then
they
walked
said,
away.
We did a capitalism, you guys, and they went, yeah.
I thought it was gonna be like there's the guy was giving a speech and then they tried to use the boards behind him and the boards cover him up.
They actually couldn't see his face the whole speech. It was covered up.
I'm not just being a good employee, but they've never bothered me at all.
They
have not bothered me
I'll say the,
one bit.
I like them.
I like them.
The
Mr.
first
Rogers.
Month, the first month when they were still working out the kinks, it was frustrating. But honestly, after that first month of the season or preseason, whatever you want to say, I didn't really notice it too much.
Are you angling for a Halford and Ruff board ad during the Stanley Cup final? Like your face is up on the side there?
I'm angling for a corporate job.
I agree with you though. I didn't really.
They don't bother me.
No, yeah, not so much.
When
either.
They glitch out, they bother me. Which
yeah,
is,
well,
at
like
least
that,
once
that,
a game.
That first month was annoying because it happened a lot. But after that, it was
A board battle for more than a minute and see how many times the puck gets clipped through the boards.
Okay, so a couple things here. One, I actually took the arduous task of going, this award exists, right? This is like Daryl Revelle porn, basically. What is his name? Darren Revelle? Darren Revelle porn, basically, where it's
Daryl
like,
Revelle.
Daryl Revelle.
Whatever his name is.
That's his brother.
Yeah.
And his other brother, Daryl.
Yeah.
That's an old Newhart reference, folks. Newhart. Good show.
Like last year's nominees, it's amazing that this exists. Like,
what's a bought and paid for award?
I know, but last year's nominees included crypto.com. Like if they win, who goes up on behalf of crypto.com?
That bodes well.
Is it one of the NFT apes just kind of walks on stage and he's like, I'd like to accept this award on behalf of all the bros doing the cryptos right now.
Can you imagine if we attended the Sports Business Journal Awards?
I don't think we're the right demographic. We're a little too caustic. socks. What is this?
And now the award for best fan engagement.
Right.
Best fan engagement. I bet there are awards for best. Are there awards for like the best social media team?
I stopped.
There has to be.
I stopped researching after I looked at that. Like
after you saw the crypto, you're like, I'm out.
Well, it's all like, you know, promotions companies.
Batman got a lifetime achievement award at that. Oh, and Fenway won sports facility of the year.
That's great.
Fenway Park. 111 years old, sports facility of the year.
Well, come on. Fenway did a great job this year. They hosted the Winter Classic.
Second time.
Apparently there was like 400 events there. They have concerts there.
I just don't think that the award show thing is kind of funny, right?
Mm-hmm. It's like the Mr. Burns Outstanding Achievement of Excellence.
But they got Smokin' Joe Frazier to do it. Like, that's cool. This is so this category last year, the Sports Business Awards Breakthrough of the year. The Seattle Kraken got nominated for it.
But for what? For breaking through into the league?
I'm like, did you just get it for existing?
Mm-hmm.
Like birth, I suppose. Like they didn't do anything in their first year other than play hockey as scheduled by the National Hockey League.
Right.
Right.
That it seems different than an actual innovative way of selling advertising.
I guess I'm looking at it. Like some of the things that they're writing about. The team also agreed to a community impact partnership with Starbucks. It's like, that's a great breakthrough, I suppose.
That's some good corporate speak there. Community, what was it called? A community what?
Community impact partnership. They make an impact.
Yeah, we should have a community impact partnership. Maybe we can activate some stuff.
There's a verticality to it that I really like.
There is, yeah. And we get a lot of engagement. Speaking of listener engagement, text into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650.
We can incentivize it by reading your text on the air.
Nice, nice. And hopefully at the end of the day, we can be able to monetize all your engagement.
Now, Moo Cow.
Text into the Dunbar Lumber text line with your What We Learns. We will read them on the other side of the monetized Halford and Brough show on Sportsnet 650.
Talking all Canucks all the time. It's Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now for my favorite part of the show. Well, that's it. Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always dead.
8:33 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Almost said hour two. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. Okay, it is humanoid time. What, do we have What We Learns that we want to do? A-Dog's got one. I have one.
I have a small one.
You have a small one. S-M-O-L.
Better
small.
Way to say it than that.
You do have a small one. What is it?
Well, this is via Daily Hives. Kenneth Chan reporting yesterday that the Canada Day fireworks in Vancouver have been permanently canceled.
Really?
And obviously this is a lot of debate on social media whether this is a good or a bad thing. This follows the pandemic time cancellations of 2020 and 2021 when, of course, the pandemic kept the fireworks from happening. In 2022, though they also were canceled, deeming although the safety restrictions had been lifted, the fireworks were just too expensive, the rising cost for events, safety, and security. And now apparently, same reason again, they're not going to be doing the fireworks, Canada Day fireworks going forward, just because of rising costs. And obviously some people hate fireworks and are very happy about this. Others love fireworks and are super disappointed. You know, the no fun city mantra yeah. getting thrown around. Yeah. I mean, I'm sort of in the middle. I live right by there, so it was fun to walk down and watch them. But also as a pet owner and seeing them suffer through fireworks, you know, that aspect of it. I understand why some people don't like the fireworks. But, yeah, a lot of people obviously very disappointed.
Yeah, the dogs all got together and yeah. and said, no more fireworks.
Yeah.
Me and Andy canceled this.
The powerful dog lobby.
Exactly. Very controversial decision, though.
Clearly. We had text about it. People actually were using yeah. that as their What We Learned.
Yeah.
I cannot get emotionally invested in fireworks. I know it's our job.
I'm kind of with you.
I know it's our job to care.
Is it?
Sometimes.
About fireworks? Do we have to care about everything?
No. Care about the things that we're talking about.
Right.
Right? There's a lot of stuff on this station where you're like, I don't think those guys are caring about what they're talking about.
I used
right
to
now.
Hate the fireworks in when I lived in Kitts because you couldn't find a parking spot.
Right. That's an emotional investment in the negative. Right?
All the people from the suburbs coming in, blah.
And now we're getting classist. Somewhat elitist.
Jason Brough in a nutshell, ladies and gentlemen.
Out
of my neighborhood.
That's it. And all of
big
our
trucks. All taking up six parking spots.
All of our conversations eventually come back to not in my backyard.
I mean, hey, I live in the West End, so obviously when we have the Symphony, I always call it the Symphony of Fire, even though it's been the celebration of life for like 15 years. Anytime that happens, obviously English Bay just pretty much shuts down and you can't go anywhere, so I feel you.
You were a GM Place guy too?
But in the interest...
I was for a long time.
The name Symphony of Fire is incredible.
It's yeah. such a good name!
Symphony of Fire!
Oh, it's so badass.
It's about as badass as a symphony can get, to be honest.
What if we light everything on
Fire? Because normally
it's
a Symphony of Dorks.
Yeah. Symphony of Lava. What could be better than Symphony of Fire?
Two parents in a symphony here, come on.
Rest our case.
Jeez.
More to the earlier point you were making.
Yeah.
Your dad, the oboe player, is cool.
He's okay. Yeah. Retired now.
Focus.
Oboist.
Focus. The no fun city thing. I do have time for that debate because Vancouver can be a pretty complex city at the best of times.
Mm-hmm.
It's super unaffordable.
Yeah.
People have a hard time making ends meet. You would think that more sort of grassroots civic programs that encourage more, for lack of a better term, fun things in a fun city would be a good thing, a nice distraction from the fact that it can be very tough to make a go of it in the city. And then the city does have a really bad reputation as being just generally unfriendly, right? Do we all know this?
Do you remember when we dropped that reputation? We dropped the reputation for like 2 years, and then we had a riot.
Yeah.
And they were like, this is what happens when we let you guys have fun.
Yeah.
We're going to dial back the fun. We invited all of you. All of you. We invited the whole city downtown for a big celebration, and we let you drink, and everyone was having a lot of fun, and then people started tipping cars over.
You started having too much fun.
Too much fun.
Just couldn't behave yourselves.
But so I'm kind of with the more events good.
Yes.
Maybe just not necessarily this event.
It's just weird. I mean, I'm obviously have no idea how much they cost, but you can't afford fireworks? Like, really? Like, just get a couple bottle rockets. I mean, how expensive could it be?
Cities are financially strapped right now.
Yeah, I get it. Tights are time.
I like to think that he's like, we've downgraded to the Firecracker Festival.
Yeah, we should have bottle rockets.
We should have this conversation, which we are totally unprepared to have. It's like, the cities are going to the feds for more money, but the feds are saying, whoa, hold on.
Yes.
The entire festival is now a dude banging screecheroos with a hammer and blowing up cans. That's what we used to do anyway.
All right. Does anyone else
Mookow.
Have a what we learned?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I never
have them.
I have them all the time.
You don't.
It's a great moment.
All right. I learned that the Toronto Blue Jays did not score 20 runs.
Why is this your what we learned?
Because yesterday it was that they scored 20 runs. Do you remember yesterday when they scored 20 runs?
Yeah.
We talked about it, right?
I remember that.
Yesterday. And now what we learned for today is that the Blue Jays did not score 20 runs. As a matter of fact, they only scored 3 in a 7-3 loss to the Rays. I just really wanted to point out that Shane McClanahan, grandson of Golden Girl Rue McClanahan, I don't think they're related.
I think they are.
He becomes the first. He's got 8 wins already. He's got like 40 wins this season.
Yeah, he's good.
Even though that stat means nothing, it means less to pitchers than it does to goalies, even though it's the most important stat. I like that the Rays had their one game where they just gave up entirely, let a bunch of position players pitch, like, go get your runs, we don't care. Came back the next night, boom, win.
Cut your losses.
That's exactly what it is, right?
Man, there was a huge crowd in Tampa last night, almost 8,700.
Nice. Good for them. Yeah. McClanahan's 8-0.
Can you imagine you got like one of the best teams in baseball?
They've done it how many years in a row now? I've lost track.
Are they gonna ever figure that out in Tampa, the stadium?
No.
I can't believe they're still playing in that stadium.
They're going to revisit the, why don't we play the
insane team
in Montreal and Tampa Bay?
Do you remember that idea?
That was great.
Do you remember that idea?
It was so illogical.
That was crazy.
We're going to share a team between natural partners, Tampa and Montreal.
The fact that it got to the heights where it did, because it was so illogical.
I felt like I was going insane. I'm like, are we really having this discussion? They're going to share a baseball team. And then what happens when they get to the playoffs? Do they flip a coin who hosts the games?
Like, I don't know much about travel planning, but that seems like a lot of work.
Where do I have a house? Do I have both?
You know what?
Do I get paid in Canadian or American?
If you're going to build a stadium, you should let the team have all the games at that stadium.
Or just half.
Not just half of them. Yeah, it's so ridiculous.
Anyway, the Jays did not score 20 runs last night at the Trop. Mookow. All right. Someone just texted in 3 words. Burning schoolhouse. That was a wildly underrated firecracker. Because it didn't really do. You just burned.
Yeah.
You just burned a schoolhouse.
I hope that's what they're talking about.
And it was a schoolhouse. And you're like, yay, school's canceled.
Yeah. It's not a real schoolhouse, okay? It's a firecracker.
Unsigned what we learned. The Canes looked flat and they lacked scoring depth. JT Miller would be perfect for them to break their 0-12 conference finals curse. How many teams have the listeners and us playing the role of idiot media traded JT Miller to?
I traded him to Carolina. I said, I said, if I'm the GM of the Hurricanes right now, I'm saying we need a game breaker. That man's.
I mean, we all know we traded him to Pittsburgh. Although that dream might be dead with the new management there, whoever that's going to be. We got pretty excited about trading him to Boston.
That was a couple rounds ago, after
the Bruins went out, because we wondered about the futures of Bergeron and Krejci down the middle, and we looked at that team and we said, well, they got guys like Pasternak and McAvoy and Lindholm. Those guys are all under contract. They're not going to want to tear it down.
Carolina's my choice now because Jordan Staal's retiring. Carolina's my choice.
Okay.
I said, it was actually funny, I was going back and forth with the texter.
I just love that there's a bunch of people listening who's like, how about don't trade him at all?
Yeah, you're saying when you guys like Sam Bennett, why would you want to trade JT Miller, who's the exact same player?
I galaxy-brained it, I'm like, because someone was arguing.
Because contracts and age don't matter in the NHL. It doesn't matter. It's just not a factor whatsoever at all.
Getting it done is what matters.
I was galaxy-braining it, and I said, if we were doing this job in Carolina, being like the AM talk morning sports guys, that were eviscerating and being house of negativity on the Canes, I would actually say they need to go out and get a game breaker like JT Miller. But I'm working in Vancouver. I'm like, they need to trade JT Miller. But if I'm me in Carolina, I'm like, that's a guy that's a difference maker in the playoffs. We need to go get him.
And they're in the window
right now.
Right now.
See?
Yeah.
You see how you flip the script, everybody?
Jay in Coston. What we learned, Sam Bennett is no longer 18 years old. The guy is built for the playoffs regardless of his lack of chin-up dominance. My theory is that Sam Bennett has been driven by the embarrassment of not being able to do a pull-up.
Even though it was like 10 years ago.
And this whole thing, like Jacob Slavin paid the price last night for Sam Bennett not being able to do a pull-up. We were at that draft.
Yep.
And Sam Bennett, it was actually hilarious. He's like, I've done one since. Would you like me to? Let's go find a playground right now. I'll do a chin up for you right now. We'll get all the media on the bus and we'll go do a chin up. And I was like, all right, let's do this.
We were at a big round table at a banquet room in a hotel, and we had a few of the prospects sitting in front of us. And Sam Bennett was like, we can go into that closet right now. There's a bar. And I can do chin-ups right now. We're like,
he's got some guy following around with a bar that he holds. He does chin-ups.
I'm telling you.
Like, I can do this now.
A little public embarrassment goes a long way to inspiring people. It's what goalies are all about. That's why we try hard, is because we don't want to be embarrassed.
Prani on the Shore, what we learned. It's day two of my quest to be among the WWL, what we learned, elite. And I'm already starting to crumble here, boys. I've been jotting what we learned down all morning, and I'm hitting a wall. Have I really learned anything in the world of sports over the last 24 hours? Have I ever learned anything, period? Is it even the right day for a What We Learned submission? Is this even the right phone number? Not sure how long I can keep this pace up. Prani on the Shore is falling to pieces. We asked him to be a big part of this show. He brought it on day one, and then the show got hard for him. Yep. It was like Jared McCann as a rookie in the NHL. Lots of promise early on, and then, as Willie Desjardins predicted, the league got hard for him.
Yeah.
And frankly, I'm starting to wonder if Prani on the Shore should even be in the big leagues. Is there maybe he's more of a Canucks Hour texter? He can learn down on the farm.
People show.
He'll score 40 People on show. Another show. If we're doing the McCann comparison.
Prani, much like Jared McCann, probably was asking a lot of questions of himself. Is it me?
Have we done enough to bring along Prani on the Shore? Is there some sort of listener development aspect?
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't it our responsibility to develop the listeners? Like, if we're the GM,
we don't have enough time. We don't have enough bandwidth. It's like Rick Tocchet. He's like, I can't deal with this Studnicka thing. I got so many other things I got to deal with.
Yeah.
Right? Prani is Studnicka or Jared McCann or maybe both.
This is getting away from me.
We kind of... this is why I love our show. In the middle of all of this conversation, someone just texted it, unsigned, rightfully so. They don't want to be associated with this. Have you ever pounded down a screecheroo, lit it, and let it go in the bathtub? No, just me. That's our listenership.
We'll read that one more time.
Have you ever pounded down a screecheroo?
Pounded down to what? Get the powder out or whatever?
No, for some reason, you get the screecheroo, but if you pound it in, I think it's compressing the gunpowder or whatever's inside. Right. It makes it more of an explosive.
Okay.
As opposed to a screech.
Then you do what? You bring it into the bathroom?
Now, this particular texter said, why not do this indoors? In the bathtub.
In a small, confined room.
Right.
I throw this in the bathtub?
Where there's lots of things like tile and glass that can break and become sharp. That's our listenerhood, basically. That's our listenership right now.
Some listener explained to his kids not to do this right now.
Don't do this.
Please
don't
do not listen.
Mike, the urologist from Brockville, what we learned, I think Toronto is going to spiral now. He's talking about the Leafs with panicked, short-sighted moves because their organization is now a tornado in the middle of the most important offseason for this core. It's possible that they make some dumb moves because it's time-sensitive. May 25th today. The draft is at the end of June. July 1st, free agency. Also, when the no move clauses kick in for Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews, giving those guys control of any trade process.
And of course, Austin Matthews is going to be traded, so he needs to control that process.
Well, according to Mike Halford here, his hot take, they got to hire a general manager, figure out hockey ops, have conversations with these guys, talk as a group about where they want the team to go, and then like execute a bunch of deals.
I bet.
So call
Shanahan
teams.
Shanahan
you
has
think
to
he
have,
has a plan?
I think, yeah, yeah. I think they call it the Shanahan plan.
Shanahan plan 2.0?
2.0. I think that they've got a plan in place.
We've had some listeners suggest that we should really push to get Jim Benning hired there. This should be our focus as responsible media members.
I saw those texts. I think it's a futile endeavor because I think that's Brad Tree Living's job. Are we wrong here? You're getting that vibe, right? You're getting the Tree Living
vibe.
Eric
Francis said yesterday.
You're getting a little Boston Pizza vibe?
He was
oh, Tree Living's getting that job.
Yeah, I think it's happening.
Have we heard anyone else?
Jim Benning.
I know Bieksa wants Gillis.
Yes.
Nonis is gone. They can't bring him back.
Yeah.
I don't think that was an option. I feel like that wasn't an option. I feel like they weren't going to go that
I feel
direction.
Like Nonis just kind of moves around organization to organization.
Probably not going to be Brian Burke or Ron Hextall.
No.
Glenn in Richmond, what we learned, Brooks Koepka got more airtime last night at the Peas game than he does all weekend during a televised live event. Yeah, he never gets airtime on a live event because the live event is usually preempted for the latest episode of Black-ish.
Or what's the other one? One Tree Hill reruns, right? That's on CW.
Yeah.
Don't pretend like you don't know this. I haven't seen them all. What are you talking about?
Chad Michael Murray, I could get lost in those eyes. Okay. What was the thing with Koepka? Who was the guy that allegedly snubbed him? Was it that the chairman of the PGA championship when he went to go give him the Wanamaker trophy? And then
oh,
he didn't
just
shake
throw
his,
it at him?
He chucked it at his feet. And then he snubbed him. There was a moment on camera where he like didn't shake Brooks's hand, and they thought it was because obviously like the defector live golfer won the tournament. You didn't see this?
Anyway, no, I didn't
okay,
see that.
Never mind then.
Does Koepka have super white teeth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very white teeth.
Right. It's like Ross and Friends. Remember when he got his teeth whitened?
Yeah. You know who has really white teeth? I know this because I met him once. The Rock.
Oh, he has super white teeth?
Yeah. Like pristine teeth. Like, can you just smile a little bit more? Just a little bit. Not like that's not smiling. You're brandishing your teeth like an angry dog. I think you need to go to smile school.
Yeah, you got to get some surgery or something.
That's not good.
Gunner from Kelowna, what we learned. I learned that although Florida has a strong playoff base, their attendance still is bad during the regular season. Still a franchise that other NHL teams support through revenue sharing. Something not right. About what? What's not right about that? Gunner from Kelowna.
Yeah,
Panthers fans I don't blame the market for not being hardcore Panthers fans. They have had almost nothing to celebrate since they went to the Stanley Cup final in 1996 and everyone was throwing rats on the ice.
Yeah.
Like it has been a long slog if you're a fan of that team. Maybe I'm misreading something from Gunner here.
I feel for Peas fans too. Are you spelling, by the way, when you're tweeting this out, are you spelling it P-E-E?
Yes.
I think it's just P apostrophe
S.
I know. You like the P part. Right.
I'm a rebel.
You live on the edge.
Kevin and Comox, what we learned, the Ulevi draft has to be the best modern day example of why you draft the best player available. I was mad for months after the Canucks did that. I'll never forget it. Love him or hate him. Matthew Tkachuk is a born winner and literally exactly what this Canucks team needs at this moment. Thanks again, Jimbo.
There's a lot of these texts, right? We've had
this discussion about best player available versus needs. And I have to admit, because I don't consider myself a prospects expert, so I don't have these hardcore opinions about the prospects. I think it would be disingenuous if I had a hardcore opinion on a prospect, considering I do not watch junior hockey. I do not watch college hockey. I watch a little bit of the World Juniors, but my World Juniors viewing is more like, go Canada.
Sure.
I hope you win, right? I'm not watching like, I really like his edge work.
We have
to work on that sort of thing. Yeah. So when that pick was made and Ulevi went off the board, I talked to a lot of people that were prospects experts, and they were like, yeah, I don't think he's going to be a superstar, but I think he's going to be a solid top four defenseman. And I said, and I remember having a conversation with the guy once, and I was like, could he be a bit like, I don't know, Dan Hamhuis or something? And he's like, yeah, that's a good comparison for him. I'm like, I'm okay with this pick then.
Yeah.
Right? Because, well, I mean, look at the issues. Look at all the conversations we have this year about the Canucks blue line. How are you going to find these guys? The Canucks need more defensemen. So at the time, they were still in that situation because I think they've been in that situation for pretty much the entirety of franchise history. Mm-hmm. I'm like, fine, get a defenseman in the door. But the texter is absolutely, absolutely right. Like, I was wrong.
Yeah.
And I think they should have, you know, you take the best player available when you have a pick that high in the draft. Like, if it's a top 10 pick or a top 15 pick, depending on the draft, draft the best player available because your whole point should be bringing in elite talent. That being said, I do think in later rounds, you do need to address needs.
You mean like don't take 9 forwards in a single draft?
That draft where you could easily see the Canucks blue line being a problem down the line and they didn't take a single defenseman?
That's problematic.
It's a great discussion to have, and I'm sure we'll have lots more discussions about the draft, assuming the Canucks don't trade away the 11th overall pick, which Halford expects them to do.
It's just one of the many hot takes that we are such big fans of here on the Halford and Brough Show. But we're done for today. We will be back tomorrow, and a friendly reminder, it's Friday. That means it's Ask Us Anything Friday. It's always fun. Get yours in now. Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. For now, we got to go, though. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He's been Jason Brough. He's been A-Dog. He's been Laddie. This has been the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.